This is Taylor Martin, writer of Number 77, Lady Ambrosia, and you're listening to The Blacklist Exposed on Golden Spiral Media.
We float like a butterfly and sting like the wrath of a forgotten sun this week on The Blacklist Exposed. I'm Agent Troy Heinrichs.
And I am Agent Aaron Peterson, and I'm looking for some hot stuff, baby.
Whoa, you are not Leslie Jones, sir.
I'm sorry, Oof. I was getting there, though, right? Huh? Everybody was getting a little excited? No?
No.
Okay, well, you're kind of an ass. Thanks, Captain Buzzkill. All right, well, I got a little carried away, and I apologize. But thanks for joining us this week as we discuss number 77 on The Blacklist, Lady Ambrosia, which aired February 11, 2016, was written by Taylor Martin and directed by Tim Hunter. Show notes and other intel for this episode of The Blacklist Exposed can be found at theblacklistexposed.com. I am out of breath, Troy.
I can imagine.
Oof, and I should never... This is why I don't go to karaoke night. Although I can do M&M. This is a true story. I can M&M like nobody's business.
Hey, even though karaoke night's for free, I would pay to see that.
Well, you're up.
Yeah. We talked about our profiling question last week, which was, what is the relationship between Josephine and Red? And there was a crap load of response on this topic because I don't know if people agreed with us, Aaron, or not. I think that they're like, how come you're so blind? So we consolidated all of your answers into a poll and tried to see where everybody kind of landed. So 69% said Josephine is a former lover. 27% said Josephine is a close friend. 3% said Josephine is Red's sister. And 1% said Josephine was Liz's mom.
What? Wouldn't it be awesome if the 1% is right? It's always about the 1%.
She's too young, though.
Maybe. Yeah, hey, you never know. I was a young dad. It happens.
It does happen.
It happens. Sometimes you're not paying attention in sex ed and things go crazy. It can happen. Okay, before we get to Lady Ambrosia, there's one thing that I want to address, I guess. After last week's show, I received several questions and emails, very respectfully, for the most part. So I wanted to address them. There's two of them. Two main ones, right? So follow along with me, Troy. You with me?
I'm with you.
Okay. How could we, this is you and I, say that the DEA agent might have been shot by Red when Nicole Phillips, the writer, wonderful woman that we did interview a little while back, so definitely check it out. We have a lot of respect for Nicole. But she said on Twitter that he wasn't. How could we say that he might have been shot by Red when she said on Twitter that he wasn't? I'm going to tackle my take, and you can say whatever you want to say. The reason for that, and the only reason we respond is because we had so many inquiries about this. The reason was, frame by frame, it isn't clear. Everybody that says it is clear, frame by frame, it's not clear. And I think it was probably intentionally shot that way. So it wasn't clear to us. And I think part of the job, I don't want to say job, because we do this because we enjoy it. Part of the scope of a podcast is to discuss possibilities, right? You don't, if it's definite, if it's actually 100% definitive, then it should be put to bed and you don't have to keep dwelling on it. Unless it's the fact that, you know, Red's her dad, because apparently we still talk about that when I'm pretty sure everybody said that he's not. But, and Twitter isn't something I consider canon. So for me personally, I don't go on Twitter. And if someone clarifies there, if Nicole Phillips, who wrote the episode, says, no, it was clearly in the script, that came from a stray bullet from the lobby, and that is who shot the DEA agent, therefore Red didn't do it, I don't consider that canon unless I actually see it on screen. So because I have seen way too many shows where they have intended to go a certain direction with the character or a plot device, something along a narrative instrument of some sort, and because they had a loophole like that, they could go a different way. So unless it is actually on the page, I don't consider it canon. And even with Nicole saying it, I'm sure she's absolutely right. I mean, obviously she knows better than we do. But for me, the viewer, it wasn't on screen, so it's an option.
Okay, I'll give you the short version now of how I take on this.
You know what? You hurt my feeling.
So very simply put, two, three things happen in this scene. And again, this is the difference between the writer writing the script and what production does with it. We heard John Bonkenkamp and Amir talk about the whole hand-holding scene between him and Samar in the hospital. And because of that scene, it was written one way, like he leans over and touches her hand. But then when you see it on screen because of what the director does and the production value, that just adds something to the scene that wasn't really there. So in this case, when they're walking away, Red actually ad-libs the line like oh, what was it? Oh my gosh, or I can't believe this, or something like that. And because he said that, it seemed like he was irritated. So already the viewers are in an irritated state. Then the camera shows a gun in his right hand at his side. Liz doesn't see a gun, but Red clearly has a gun in his hand. And then they're talking, whatever, and then the bullet gets fired and he gets shot, and Red still has the gun in his right hand. And then he eventually pitches the gun away into the ice crate of fish heads or whatever it was. And so because he gets rid of the gun, you immediately go, well, he got rid of the gun because the DEA agent died and he didn't want to be tied back to ballistics and blah, 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 blah. But at the end of the day, if Red hadn't shot him because he said, oh my gosh, I can't believe this originally, the expectation from the audience on Red's character would be, if there was a stray bullet that came from the other room, Red would have been like, oh my gosh, how fortuitous is that? Yeah, he would have laughed. He would have been like, that's just icing on the cake, you know?
To be fair, he did laugh. He giggled.
He did, but he could have just giggled because he liked shooting people too. But he would have been more boisterous about the fact that, oh, well, that takes care of that problem. And he would have moved on. And then because that wasn't in the script, makes me still think that Red shot him.
Well, I don't think Red shot him. I do think it was a stray bullet just because of, I just think that, because I think it would have been more obvious. But I think it was shot so that it could be
talked about.
Debatable.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. That's just one of the things that happens. I mean, it's just, that's why we like this show, because it does things, whether they're intentional or not. And I'm sure a lot of the things that we contemplate, all of us, everybody listening, that we contemplate and pick apart and everything, they're probably like, many of those things, they probably go, we didn't intend you guys to pick that apart at all. And we're just overthinking it to an nth degree.
And then because of that, they go write something else that they want us to overthink next week.
Exactly. The second one was, how can you imply, and this is directed right at me, Red's relationship was anything but romantic when it says in TV Guide that it's an old flame, etc. That one is really simple. Same theory applies. I don't consider TV Guide canon. I don't read the description because it's the same thing. A lot of the things that you will see, if a story is written, like at one point it might have been that Samar and Aram, he had no feelings for her at some point in the script or whatever. And then they decided later after that moment where they touched the hand to make Aram have affection for her in a different way. If that was in TV Guide, does that mean that that's definitive, that they were just friends before? I mean, it's just because it says something in a TV Guide, that's just a description. That's not canon for the show. I don't consider it canon for the show. It's definitely not something to be used in a debate because it's not part of the show. Now, I do think, and I rewatched it actually twice since then, my needle moved a little bit to where I'm kind of, yeah, all right, old flame. But I do think when you have the omission, and some people feel like, what, because there's no affection that can't be love? Well, no, but there was no kiss. There was no, I mean, there are several things that to me would imply a previous romantic relationship, as opposed to this is a Aram Samar situation where Josephine maybe has affection for Red. Maybe it was never returned. You know, I mean, there's a lot of different ways you could go, and it could have been just close friend. There's a lot of ways to take it the way they shot it. I think that one was intentional so we could talk, but yeah. I don't consider TV Guide canon.
Yeah. And some people were talking about the casting call sheet said that this was like Red's lover previously. And the thing with casting call sheets is that the casting call sheet is to tell the potential actor or actress who's coming in to read for the part, how to play the part.
Right.
Like you're supposed to act as a lover. You know, it's not to say that they are a lover. It's so that you can get into the character and what the character is supposed to be in the scene that they're going to be playing in. And because the casting call sheets are going out to everybody else that's not the general television audience, I think our job as podcasters are to only analyze what we see on the screen as the finished product.
Right. So that's great information. I'm glad everybody's is that kind of devout fan, where they're reading on that stuff. I think that's great if it brings you enjoyment. But for me personally, when I'm talking about a show or I'm discussing what happened in a show, that's not going to be a canon element for me.
Yeah.
Canon being the plot points, if you don't know what that meant.
And we're trying to interpret it, too, from the general viewing audience, right? I mean, there's, what, 12 million people or so that are still watching the show. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, granted, we have, like, the Uber fans, which are you guys that are listening to the podcast, but then there's also all these other people that eventually will find the podcast, maybe when the show's done, or go back and do their rewatches or whatever. So we want to make sure that we're getting all points of view, not just the rabbits that are out there.
Yeah, and I did switch. I mean, you know, it isn't because of anybody saying anything about it. It's just a matter of my opinion doesn't work that way. Rewatching it, okay, I do think it's romantic. I do, from what I saw, it feels more one-sided, because that's why I keep going back to the Aram Samar relationship, where she seemed infatuated with Red. He cared about her, but it wasn't love. You know, that's how I saw it. I think, you know, rewatching again, I do think the whole episode is just a reference to Liz's situation with Tom and everything, but it's very, very cool. I think it was being fortuitous of Tom and Liz and where their situation was going, which comes into play in Lady Ambrosia.
It certainly does.
Segway.
But first, we got to know the answer to our profiling question for this week for Lady Ambrosia. We want to know.
Oh, is that my cue?
That's your cue.
Yeah, it's my cue. All right. All right, hot stuff. What's in the file? What is in the file? That mysterious file that old Red has in his lap, the Paktoba Rostova.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep, something like that.
Sure, sounds good. Paktoba Rostova. What is in that file, and how does it apply to everything? So that's what we want to know from you guys. What's in the file?
Yeah, it'll be great to know. So now, don't get super excited and fall down a well, because we're going to discuss this week's case profile.
Did you really just do that? You're so funny. All right, this week we head into one of those cases that make me want to punch a baby killer. This is about a young boy who's found bloody and starving on a grocery store floor. This is a really disturbing episode, by the way. I thought this was going to be about zombies. No zombies. Very disappointed there.
I just thought it was going to be about college kids that were trying to find some Funyuns and some food because they had the munchies and, you know, bumped into each other and cut himself on the end aisle cap or something.
Look, you and I are both Walking Dead fans as well. Anytime you see a kid with the munchies in the middle of the grocery store and there's blood around him, he's a zombie. Shoot him in the head. Why didn't anybody just shoot this kid in the head? I mean, it sounds mean. He's autistic. I get it. But he's just laying around on the grocery store floor. Come on now.
Look at the flowers, Aaron. Look at the flowers.
Well played. Shapeshifters is really what the story that Red is talking about. He's talking about Lady Ambrosia and how she gathers unwanted children, disabled, autistic, or in that context. She keeps these kids until they hit puberty, and it seems like she treats them like gold. She gives them a life that they wouldn't have had with the parents they were going to have. But then, once they hit this puberty mark, she wraps them up, finger paints symbols on them, drops them in Chekhov's well. Yeah, I called it. I'll explain that in a minute. And the butterflies that flutter out supposedly signify like a blossoming or something along those lines. What do you think about this twisted plot? Loved it, by the way. Well, yeah, it's very Silence of the Lambs. I like that.
Yeah, I have to say first that Taylor Martin has got one sick mind. But I love that they use the concept of transformation and how it tied into the fact that Lady Ambrosia really wanted to transform these children where, in her opinion, they were damaged goods, and she was protecting them from what the world was going to throw at them in the future because of her son. And this allows them to be beautiful and what they could have been had they not been damaged from the start, according to her. I don't want people yelling at me because this is a very touchy subject. But at the same time, you know, I really loved how they did this kind of like ritual thing, because it's, she made it seem like they were a family and like it was a good thing, which then just amps up the entire, you know, psycho status of this, you know, Lady Ambrosia. And I mean, it's just weird, you know, it's just weird. And I'm like, how is Taylor doing this? This is really, really funny.
It puts the lotion on its skin or else it gets the hose again.
Yep.
It was a very disturbing concept. I really didn't know where they were going to when it first started, just because. Well, I mean, I guess you know the kids are doomed, right? But you never really believe that they're going to kill a kid in a TV show. We've talked about that before. That's one of the TV taboos. Like, they always avoid it. Well, nobody ever wants to kill a kid on TV.
And I love, too, because when she throws the kid down the well, well, he throws the kid down the well and turns into the butterflies, and then she turns around and talks to her son and says, you know, I know what you did. So your first impression is that maybe Lady Ambrosia's not the one killing him. Maybe it's the son that's killing him when we're back to, like, the giant soapy guy in the woods running around, and, you know, he's the one that's hunting people, so the parents aren't really doing anything bad. So initially, at first glance, I thought maybe the eldest son was the one that was, you know, maybe doing something worse, like molesting or pedophile or whatever, and then he ends up killing him, and then she has to take care of it some way. So she's taking care of it by doing this butterfly transformation so that all the other kids don't get scared and run away. That was my first impression, just like in the first glance, you know, and obviously we know it's totally different at the end.
Well, Choi's mad at me because I figured the whole thing out in the first 5 minutes.
I did not.
You are mad at me. You're like, you watch too much TV if you figured that out. But that's why I called it Chekhov's well, because as soon as the well, the butterflies came out, she made the comment to Theodore about how I know what you did. The other kids already escaped, so my everything came into view. She's taking the kids. She's killing the kids. He's dumping the bodies. He let the other kid go away. And at the end of the episode, she's going to go down the well, and he's going to jump in after. It's going to be Shakespearean, and it was. And I told my wife this at the very first 5 minutes of the TV show. I'm like, want to talk to my wife, Troy? Want to hear it? She heard me say it. And he's just like, you watch too much TV, Peterson. You should not be allowed to watch this much television.
I mean, but I could see where you could go that route. I was giving a benefit of the doubt because it was Blacklist. And I was like, okay, maybe the kid is doing the killing. Maybe the kid escaped because somehow, you know, either the father let him out or he missed or something or tripped or fell. Or because we've had other times in the Blacklist where we've had people that were in captivity, like the judge, and the guy shows up walking on the middle of the road in the middle of winter and somehow escapes the judge's, you know, confinement and everything. You had the pregnant lady from the Cypress Agency. So there's different times where the captives have gotten away. And so because of that, I thought maybe this kid just happened to get away, which means that the son could have still been doing the killing. So I was hoping it wasn't going to be as telegraphed as you said it was.
I wouldn't consider it telegraphed either. It's just one of those things where I have a disturbing mind. So I leap to what's the most disturbing way to go. And that's what I would do. So it's just more in line with my line of thinking. I don't think it was predictable, I guess. It predictable to me doesn't mean that I find it predictable. Does that make sense?
It does.
I mean, I always look for the most disturbing way to go. And that's just what I like. And that's where it went. So be it. Back to the episode. These kids have been presumed dead for years. Then later found. So This is an intriguing concept because I guess, you know, people stop looking for them is really what's at play here. So they have this adoption thing that is Noah ends up arranging between the parents where, like, basically take Ethan. His mom and dad were, when Ethan came out, he's autistic. They were concerned. Mom especially was concerned. So they contemplated adoption because they didn't know if they could handle the stress of raising Ethan, right?
She didn't think she could handle the stress.
Right, she didn't. Well,
he was fine. He wanted to.
He went along
with
it, though. Right, he went along with it.
I don't know if he really went along with it. Did he?
He went. He said that he took in the meeting to appease her, but he had no intention of giving up his son.
Right,
is what he said.
Right, right.
So he went along with the meeting. So they go. They do the meeting, and apparently, you know, Dad says, "No, I'm not going to do that." Noah sees that Mom really wants to do this, and what? Goes up to her at some point afterward and offers the opportunity to, we'll take him to a better place off your hands, but you have to think that he's dead. Is that kind of how that works?
Yep. You have to presume that he's gone, basically.
And you have to pay him an exorbitant amount of money, right?
Right.
Okay. That means that she's a really evil woman, if you think about it. Like, just a sadistic woman. She not only gave up her child, which, hey, If I respect you, if you do not feel like you can handle the responsibility of taking care of that disabled child, definitely make sure someone will, so that someone won't take care of that child. But she not only gave her kid up, she did it maliciously. You know, she lied to her husband, and then she paid somebody to take him, and then she pretended like he was dead, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's sadistic, is it not?
It's very sadistic, and I think that's exactly the the thing we're trying to showcase through her, Jeannie, I forget which one it was, because I'm just looking at it written out in spelling terms. Jean, I think it would be, because it's two N's, one E. And then you look at Lady Ambrosia, and she's kind of in the same mentality state with her son. And because of that, it's really interesting how you like think about how could a parent actually do that to their kid, even if it's a kid that they don't want. Like in the case of Liz, you know, with this whole adoption and baby, I got to give it up because it can't be in this life. You know, she's literally got to think about giving it up for good because the open adoption thing's not working. And then right away in the beginning of the episode, we're like, oh, look, this open adoption thing could be possible. So then she's tying with her battle inside. So it's really an interesting concept about mothers. And then, of course, we get into a conversation about Liz's mom also in this episode. So very much a motherly focused show this week.
Well, I think it's been very motherly focused the last few weeks, right? I mean, it's been kids, lots of kids. The kids this week, they were presumed dead and et cetera, et cetera. But when you talk about the correlation to Liz, there is definitely a lot at play here because this is all going into should she give her kid up for adoption. And we're going to talk about her specific adoption and these adoptive parents, which I'm not so sure about. We're going to talk about them too. But let's finish with Lady Ambrosia. She also has this creepy son Theodore we talked about. Her husband is named Noah. He sets all of this up. And by sets up, I mean he arranges to kidnap the kids from willing parents. This is a horribly disturbing concept. And Lady Ambrosia obviously feels that she is doing good by this. But do you think it ever registers with her? I mean, is she a complete sociopath that she does not register that killing a child, even if they're 12 or 13, is wrong?
Well, I mean, I think she sees it in her mind, which does make her a complete sociopath, that she's actually sparing them from being killed in society. So what she's doing is actually better than the, you know, shame and harmfulness that's going to come to them as adults. So in her mm-hmm. mind, I think she's actually doing the right thing, but that makes you a sociopath because it's not right.
Generally, yeah, as a rule. As a rule, it makes you a sociopath. Man.
And it makes Noah a sociopath for going through it with it, too, because then he's actually worse because even though he's not doing the killing, he's taking the cash.
I don't know if anybody, they're all bad, except for Theodore. I don't think Theodore is bad. In fact, I do feel like his ending was a little tragic because it's sad. Everything about that is sad. But I don't know. I don't really feel much. I think they're all just awful, awful people, yeah, and they all deserve to be in that well.
I mean, yeah, and I feel bad for Theodore because even though he killed Jeannie, I'm going to get it wrong the whole episode, so you can just curse me now.
Mm-hmm.
But even though
he's
bagging and tagging her, right, suffocating her in the van or whatever, I mean, mm-hmm. all he's doing is following the fourth commandment, right? Honor thy father and thy mother, or you will be turned into a butterfly yourself.
Yeah, and plus I'm cool with it because I didn't like mom. Mom was really, she's evil. Killer. That's cool.
Yep.
I'm good with it. I like when Blacklist takes care of people that don't deserve to be around.
That's right.
Which, speaking of, where's Mr. Solomon been? Is he still in jail?
He's still in jail, as far as I know.
Okay. So, you know, we get this ending, and what happens? We get the red speech to Lady Ambrosia, and he's really been, the whole purpose of this is that he's been searching for this one kid. Now, I realize obviously it's the system of convenience, because Ethan showing up gave an opportunity for him to find the kid that's going to lead to the folder that he needs that, you know, whatever. That's television. I'm not going to pick that apart. It happens.
That's classic Blacklist season one.
Absolutely. It's classic television is really what it is. I mean, you almost have to have these conveniences for stories to work out. So it happens. But the one thing I really liked was when he shows up and he's there and you can tell what he is there for. I mean, he's there for the child. And once he sees her, he doesn't pull any punches. He finds her disgusting. He actually has sympathy for these children. It's nice to see empathy in Red. I mean, you know, often he doesn't have those moments. So it really proved to be a great episode for emotional connection to our characters.
Absolutely, 100%. I mean, that line when he's sitting there in the chair and he's like, Theo says, you know, I'm ugly. And he turns around and says, from where I sit, there's only one ugly person in this room and it's not you. Mm-hmm. I was like, that was just brilliant on Red's part because it just shows he does have a heart at some point, you know? And I think this is a thing that we struggle with as Red because we talked about it ad nauseum, I think, in season two when we had this whole Red versus Liz and is Red going to kill Liz when he finds out the fulcrum and the bunny and all that jazz. I think that this is where, again, you're getting sucked into, man, Red's a good guy, but then you forget he's a criminal. So when's the wool going to be pulled over our eyes as the audience to say, haha, look, he really is just a stupid SOB.
He's not a good guy. He's a complicated guy. That's what I would say.
Yes.
I think there are many facets to where he's at. This is just one of them. He's not okay with hurting children, and nor should anybody be. I think it'd be hard to take a character. It would be hard to be sympathetic to a character that hurts kids, I think, in modern times. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if you could do that. I don't know if you could have, like, Walter White, a lot of people still had sympathy with him, hurt a child. Then it kind of went to a different level. You know what I'm saying? It's really hard to have sympathy with a character once he's okay with hurting kids. So I'm glad that they put that in there. Like, hey, he'll hurt a lot of people, but not children. Children is disgusting to him. He won't do that.
Right.
Yeah. So you hear all about the brothers and how one brother died. And of course she held poor autistic Theodore accountable. That was really fair, lady. And then you get this Shakespearean ending where you get Theodore dragging his mother to the well, dropping her in and killing her, and then killing himself. What do you think about that ending? I guess for a lot of people, not me, a lot of people shocked them. They'd never expected Theodore to die.
I was one of them. When I was watching it, I was like, I totally expect him to turn and kill them. Because when Red didn't kill the mother, I was like, okay, Theo's going to kill the mom. Got that. No problem. Yep, it's going to happen. And then drops him in the well. I was like, oh, that's super poetic. That's awesome. And then when he just stands there and then like looks around and then climbs up on the... I was like, what are you doing? What are you doing? And then he jumps in and I was like, damn, why'd you do that? Like, you were free. Yeah. You could have redeemed yourself and had the life and proved your mom wrong that you are worthy of society. And then you just went ahead and offed yourself. And it was like, man, kind of like making you think a little bit. Apparently, because you saw it coming the whole way from 5 minutes in.
I still think it's good. That doesn't mean that I didn't think it was good. I just kind of saw it coming. Look, every time every episode starts, right? You're an avid fan. You watch it. You kind of, however it begins, you're kind of like looking to the end, like, I wonder how this is going to end. I just got this one right. It doesn't happen every episode. This one I just happened to get right. Probably because, Taylor, you're just as disturbing as me. That's what I'm thinking. Because I go creepy, usually. I think creepy, not go. That just what came out really wrong.
Well, the first step to recovery is admitting you have a problem, so.
It sure is. The thing I liked about him killing himself is that, you know, his whole life, even though he just came to this revelation, he's still autistic. He's developmentally delayed, right?
Right.
So he's not going to process things the way that we would. We would, sure, she ruined his life. She killed all these children. I'm killing you and I'm done with it. I'm free and clear. I'm going to go live my life. If you're a rational person with equatable thinking to your average human, he doesn't have that process. He has grown up believing that he will be redeemed by jumping in this well, by falling in this well. He will be saved. He will blossom. He will be reborn, you know, however you take it. And I think that's what we got from that.
Yeah, and it's not Stockholm syndrome, obviously, because he's not going to fall in love with his mom. But
you make everything weird.
Well, it's like Stockholm syndrome. I think that because he's seen these kids transform into butterflies, and he really thought they transformed into butterflies, because he's developmentally delayed, I think there was something in there that basically allowed him to, you know, get programmed into thinking it was real. And that's why he ends up jumping in, because he really thinks he's going to turn into a butterfly and be cleansed and free and all this other stuff because of the fact that maybe it snapped because he killed his mom. Like, oh, I killed my mom, so I got to cleanse this because I'm a bad person. So the only way I know how to not be a bad person is to turn into a butterfly.
Good call. It was really interesting. Some good twists in there. I like that storyline. That's a cool concept. Now let's get into our characters, is there anything else about Lady Ambrosia and them that you wanted to discuss?
Well, you know what? It was really funny, too. Not funny, but interesting.
Yeah, you better be careful, man. People are going to think you're okay with this.
I'm tired.
You're okay with wrapping up your kids, throwing them in a well somewhere? Is that what you're saying?
Apparently, huh? I hate babies, too.
People go to jail for that.
But what was interesting was the fact that even though this was like about developmentally delayed children and people that, you know, have, you know, challenges and things. And then we have the other side of the coin on Red's storyline where he's trying to get this file, that even in that situation, the kid was hearing impaired and had to use sign language, and it tied into Red's story, which we'll hear in Red's rhetoric later on. I just thought it was interesting that specifically that he had to work with someone that had, you know, a developmentally challenged as well for his purposes in this case.
Yeah, very disturbing all over. Although I'd be lying if I didn't say I've thought about dropping my kids in a well a couple times. It happens. Well, that's what being parent means.
Especially because I don't share your football affiliation, too.
Yeah, neither one of my kids. Man, I did something horribly wrong. But they all still love me, so hey, what are you going to do? All right, characters. Let's go to characters. Start with music, Troy. This is all you, buddy.
Yeah, yeah. In case you didn't know it, The Hollywood Reporter actually tracks what are the most topped Shazammed songs on TV.
Say it right.
Shazammed! Yeah, that's right. Shazam songs on a TV on a given month. And not only did The Blacklist have four of the top 10 songs in January, it actually had the number one spot with Andra Day's Rise Up. I'm sure you could have figured that out. Mm-hmm. And they also had three of their four were actually in the top five. That's pretty impressive.
That is pretty impressive.
Yeah, the other contenders were at number nine, It Works Itself Out by Half Moon Run. At number five was Sour Cherry from The Kills, one of my favorites. And number three was Gamble Everything for Love that you mentioned last week from Ben Lee.
Didn't I say it last week? Yeah. That is my new song. That's my new jam, as the kids say.
It's a good one. And of course, number one with Rise Up from Andra Day. So as we watch the show, for more than just this Liz Red relationship, right? We talked about that. You know, would you keep watching if you knew the answer? And I think a lot of people are watching it because they love the music, and it's great. Because I remember the only reason I kept watching The OC, because it got really weird towards the end. The only reason I kept watching that show is because the music was so good.
Wait, you watched The OC?
Dude,
really?
Six soundtracks, man. Those six soundtracks, like, totally made my, you know, Audis or whatever you want to call it.
It's all starting to make so much sense.
Yeah, I still really got 12 seasons of Grey's Anatomy under my belt, too.
You know, the sad thing is I saw that song, that Ben Lee song, came out like 7 years ago or something like that. Like, it's been out for a while.
Right.
And I'm just that incompetent with new music that I had no idea. So thanks to The Blacklist, because I probably have about 20 new songs that I didn't even know existed because of it.
Good stuff. Mm-hmm. So obviously we have this week's selections. I Still Remember by Linda Crow comes on during the scene when Theo suffocates Ethan's mom while she's talking to Noah. I have to say, the one thing I really love about the music selections is whenever they kill somebody on TV on the show, the music selections are just so like peppy and happy and weird, and they also fit the scene with the lyrics. And this was
like Everybody Loves a Clown last week.
Exactly. Yeah. This is exactly that same concept. So great selection there. Linda Crow, you can get it on Apple Music or on Spotify. And then Just Breathe by Don Brownrigg. Ethan's reunited with his father. Tom gets rushed into surgery. And Liz, of course, reads Wizard of Oz, because she mentioned that at the beginning of the episode, in case you missed it, to her baby in Ethan's fort.
I love that song, by the way. That was a really good song. So I'll probably be adding that to my Spotify list.
You bet.
How about Glenn? Let's start with Glenn. He loves to torture Red. And now, did he set up this whole the Leslie Jones thing, the hot stuff?
He had to have. Because you can't. He's behind closed doors, and then he was like, "Yeah, how's it going, hot stuff?"
It's so funny. I got to talk about that moment, because that is something that never happens in the show, right? You never see Red caught off guard and put in a situation where you've got this. I mean, woman just being happy. You're hot. Da 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 da. We think you're sexy and all this other stuff. And just seeing Spader react, I thought was hysterical, because you see him smiling several times, and I can't tell if that's because of her and the way she's presenting it, or if it's Red in character kind of thing,
or if he's like laughing in the back of his mind because he's like, Glenn, you SOB, you set this up.
So funny. I really didn't know if that was going to work, because I knew she was guest starring on the show. And obviously, you know, Leslie Jones, she's a Saturday Night Live comedian, and she's going to be in the new Ghostbusters movie. Which, hey, you and I are remake this movie, right? Cheap plug.
Yep.
So the fact that I knew she's going to be there, I'm like, well, how's that going to play? Because this can totally be a jump the shark moment if it's done wrong. You know what I mean? And it was really, I thought it was really funny. And people were just going nuts on the internet. I think people loved it. Because it wasn't like a whole episode, it was just a short scene, really well played on both people's parts.
Yeah, and I'm a cyclist, so let me tell you, man, spin class ain't no joke.
No, it's not. It's no joke. No joke. But back to Glenn. This time, he's trying to track down somebody for Red. You know, he's given up a nooner with Trudy. just to find this out, he's taking on dogs. Apparently, does he secretly love dogs? Is that what he's saying?
Yeah, that's what he said. He's like, what about the dogs? He's like, I'll keep them. I love dogs. We got to go to the dog park.
Okay.
And I love the fact that they actually tied off the fact from Alistair Pitt, because those were the Pomeranians that were Alistair's.
Yes, they were.
So, because I looked for the tongue hanging out and just to make sure.
Did you really? You're like, you and that creepy obsessive tongue thing. I don't know what's going on. How do you eat? How do you eat? Well, the whole reason was that they wanted him. Red needed Glenn to hunt down Vasilia Patinka, who comes into play later. So we'll come back to her. But that's really what his purpose was, and some great comic relief. I love Glenn. I really do. I love Glenn.
Oh, you didn't put it in the format here, but we should also then mention Brimley, because it was like, okay, so we get Glenn and we get Brimley with his alpaca or llama. Not sure exactly where it classifies him, but it's in the same genus or family, species, phylum, whatever you want to call it. So, Glenn and Brimley in one episode. We just needed Leonard Call, and we'd have a trifecta.
Yeah, is he, like, torturing guys with llamas? Is that what he's doing?
I had that thought come into my mind as I watched the episode. I was like, is the llama just licking him to death?
It's like, what kind of torture is that? Why is a llama in there? But, hey, that seems like an episode I need to see soon.
Exactly.
I talked about how I like Disturbing. That sounds interesting. I like it. We should mention Boz. We never mentioned Boz. And we should. The actor, he's the hippie that lives across the hall that protects Liz all the time. I say hippie because he has long hair. It's probably not a fair stereotype, but that's what I'm going with.
Yeah, some people refer to him as Michael McDonald sometimes, the singer.
Exactly. His name's Bazel Boz. And the actor playing him, the reason I just wanted to mention him was he actually has a history working undercover with the CIA and a lot more. And he's done a lot of things for people since he left the agency, aside from his acting. So I just think everybody should go Google him, because I think you'll kind of be inspired.
Now, he is
really a cool guy.
He got a charity and everything out there. I mean, just really awesome when you think about it, because he's just this guy in the background, Red's henchman, Michael, you know, people call him Michael McDonald. And then here he's like a true CIA guy.
It just really cool, you know, just one of those little nuggets that you see. I think somebody put it in the Blacklist Exposed Facebook group a while back, and I meant to mention it for a couple weeks, like one of his charities or his charity. And we keep forgetting. So I wanted to definitely make sure to point that out. Go find him. Bazel Boz, Bazell, and then Baz. And his character in the show is named Boz, so it's pretty easy to connect.
Yep.
Dembe, not a whole lot this week. Much stoicness as usual. But I wanted to bring something up because we took a little poll this week in all the Blacklist groups and on Twitter. They got hundreds of responses to this concept. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. If Dembe, Samar, Wrestler, and Tom were locked in a room by a Blacklister, and only one would be allowed to leave alive, and Red could never, ever arrive in time, who would make it out alive? Right?
Got it.
Now, Dembe won by a landslide. So I recommend we all keep him on speed dial next time we get trapped in that little saw room.
Well, if you put hashtag Dembe Loyals on it, you know.
Yeah, there you go.
Kind of skews the vote. It is an election year after all.
Man, I mean, everybody, you know, Wrestler got some votes, Samar got some votes, and Tom got, I think Tom was second. But man, Dembe just blew the competition away. So if I'm ever locked in a room, I want Dembe to protect me.
Well,
with a villain.
And
with a villain.
I thought there was I can't remember if it was a tweet or if it was on Instagram, but someone said Dembe has to get out because if anybody else got out, Red would kill him because they killed Dembe.
This is true. So really, that's the only
Dembe
way
wins by default.
Wins. He wins by default, yeah. Okay, so really he didn't have much else to do, but I thought that was fun, and we got so many people responding, I thought it was worth mentioning. Aram didn't do a whole lot. I mean, actually, Aram, Cooper, Wrestler, and Samar didn't do a whole lot this week, so we're going to be real quick with them, okay? Aram, he pieces together connections and finds Lady Ambrosia, Clarice Starling style, through the butterflies. Carnivorous butterflies. I didn't even know there were such a thing.
And that was the interesting part of the episode. I want to call this out because when he said that, I thought when they prepare the body before they throw him down the well, because I was like, how are there so many butterflies always in the bottom of this well? And I thought maybe that they were putting larvae of these butterflies on the kids, kind of like a chrysalis and cocooning process, and the kids became food for the larvae, and then the larvae would turn into butterflies.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, I kind of, that like, why would they mention that they're carnivorous butterflies in the first place if that wasn't the case?
Very interesting stuff. I just thought it was really cool. And Now, you do notice the connection to Silence of the Lambs here, right? I'm not just blind.
Oh, yeah, yeah, totally.
Or you're not just... I'm not blind. You're not just blind?
No, no, no. No,
there's definitely some serious Silence of the Llamas. God, now I got llamas in my head. We should change it. This is Silence of the Llamas. That's the name of this episode now. Taylor, why don't you change it? Silence of the Llamas.
Someone's going to go make that movie now. And you're going to have a llama sitting there with a mask on and then stick his tongue out. Fava beans.
A spoof, and Marlon Wayans will be in the lead.
Oh, dear God.
Oh, yeah, it'll happen. All right, so that's about all with Ram. Cooper? What does Red get out of this? I think we'll come back to that. That's really the main thing where he asks the question. Everybody's wondering at the end, what does Red get out of this file that he went through all this trouble to get? We're coming back to that one, okay?
I'm glad that Cooper actually says the line, though, because the entire first season, nobody asked that question until Liz basically tries to figure it out on her secret clubhouse of, oh, how this is how all the blacklisters are connected. So I love that someone finally is like, why is Red doing this?
We know he's getting something out of this. Well, hopefully they've learned this lesson by now.
Exactly.
He doesn't
right.
do anything for the heck of it.
Yep, yep.
Wrestler, I'd never give up my kid for adoption. You jackass. You should probably be careful when there's a pregnant woman in the room not to say that statement.
This guy's just never going to get another lady friend.
No, he's alienating ladies left and right. Left and right. But, I mean, he didn't know she's looking into it, but still. Come on, man. Hey. She's pregnant. You don't know what she's going to do.
He's just doing his job.
And then, which also ties into Samar, she gives that nice little look like she knows because she, you know, they know. They're in the sisters club. They know. And people give up their kids for all kinds of reasons. Now, was that a reference just to Liz, or do you think maybe we could start another rumor? Do you think there's something else like in her past?
Oh, I didn't think of that. Thank you very much. Now I'm going to be...
Maybe she gave up a child at one point. I mean, or she knows somebody that did.
The line you're assuming is written two ways. One is to obviously throw a dig back at Wrestler because she's still pissed off at him. And then the other one, of course, is to support her sister in Liz. But yeah, thanks for throwing a third one in there. I appreciate that.
You're welcome. Go ahead. Figure that out. Maybe Samar is really Liz's brother.
And that's what she was broken up over Levi, because maybe she had a kid with Levi, never told him. And now Levi's getting married. And oh my gosh.
How do you miss it? That was such a good joke, and you wasted it. I got
to
move on.
Because I'm not listening to you anymore. You keep putting things in my head.
Genie. I dream of Genie. That's what I was thinking the whole time.
Yep.
Gina Zany Tacos. Zanatakis. She is jealous and gives Tom every opportunity to come with her, which I want to point out, probably should. I mean, on the list of horrible things you've done, Tom, abandoning your child wouldn't be at the top of the list. So you could probably just leave that kid and you'd be all right.
Yeah, rule number one, when a woman asks you to go to Zurich, you say yes.
When an attractive woman that is badass asks you to go to Zurich and she has a cool accent, you leave.
Yep.
You leave your child. That's the way America works. We just go. But he doesn't. He's trying to be a good guy while he's robbing people and things. And, you know, I guess we called it. She double crosses him. I think we said that last week.
Now,
right?
This is the big question now, because this has been the B story for the last 2 weeks and into the next week. So was she paid to kill Tom? Was this all set up originally from Red to begin with?
No, I don't think so, because she gave him the option to leave.
Okay, then.
Like she specifically, at least on two different occasions that I can recall in the episode, she's like, come with me. Leave baby mama. Come with me. So and then he's like, no, I'm going to go be a dad with all this stolen money.
So Gina's working 100% on her own. This isn't even like the Major telling her, go kill Tom, because Major wants payback.
No, I think Major wants everybody that was involved in that job whacked. I just like saying whacked. I always do. And Tom is just a factor of that. I don't even think that the Major knows that Tom is there.
Okay, so we're putting it on tape right now. On the record, you're saying Gina acted alone in trying to off Tom in this episode.
I'm saying I accidentally caught the preview for next week, so I know they're alluding to something along that lines. I think that's just the way marketing works. I don't think that Red had anything to do with Tom getting killed or shot, I should say. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not saying she acted alone. The Major might have been involved, but I don't think Red was involved, which is really what you're asking.
Yeah, correct. Okay. So you are on the Red is not involved, so I would be on the potentially Red is involved.
Sure. So are you taking that side just because I picked the other side? Is that what you're doing? It feels like that's what you're doing.
Got to do that. Got to make sure we got, you know, people in the audience cheering for one or the other.
No, they're just not going to cheer for you. So if you think one way, why don't you just go that way? I don't understand.
Everything is tied to red somehow. So I still say in the back of my mind, somehow this is tied to red.
Man, he can't be involved in everything.
Yes, he can.
He cannot. He's got other stuff going. He's got to sit in people's chairs and tell story time all the time. He ain't got time to be taking care of Tom, too. By the way, it's good. It's worth mentioning. He told three stories in this episode, and only one person died from that story.
That's true.
Well, from two people from one story, but only people died during one story. I think that's worth noting.
Well, it's because he threw his gun away in the fish head container. He didn't have a gun to kill him with.
God. way to bring it back, Troy. Tom.
Tied together.
Yeah, it's all connected. It is Marvel. Tom, I got to ask. People say he's redeemed himself. I don't know where or when that has happened, but that's what I keep reading, that he's redeemed himself. People say he's turned a corner. But for me personally, right, this guy has done more to put Liz in harm's way than even Red. So in my opinion, I do not see what people are seeing. Are you seeing something different? Are you seeing a changed man who just committed a robbery to better his child, I guess?
No, clearly not, because there's a really great thing with stay-at-home moms, stay-at-home dads, but you know, stay-at-home dads are a really interesting breed of character all on their own. So if he really wanted to be a changed person, he'd just be a stay-at-home dad. Don't worry about the money. Red will take care of him. There's a trust fund apparently in play. You know, he can. If Liz doesn't want to take the trust fund, Tom will clearly take the trust fund because he's got no problem taking money from other people.
Mm-hmm.
And he just stay at home, be domestic.
Yeah. And I understand people are fans of the character. Absolutely understand that. Whenever I'm a fan of a character, it's hard for me to say they're a complete douchebag. He's a complete douchebag. He is not redeemed. I'm sorry. I don't like Tom. And it's not Ryan's fault. I think Ryan's playing him how he's written, and they're writing him how they do. And I think the purpose is, you know, or the reasoning would be, is that no matter what he does, he can't seem to get himself out of being bad karma. He is always getting in his own way. He is his own worst enemy. He is a douchebag. Not intentionally. I mean, I think inside he's trying to do what's right, in his mind what's right, but his mind is so warped he can't ever do what's right because what's right isn't what's right.
Which is right? Yeah, that's the parallelism to Theo. Right, because even though he wants to be Jacob and he wants to be the person that he was originally, this innocent, this child, at the end of the day, he still does the wrong thing, which in the case of Theo, just jumping into a well.
Yeah, he just doesn't do the right. That was a connection I'm still trying to wrap my head around, but all right. He's just a guy that can't seem to find his way out of the darkness. He is stuck. Unlike Red, where I think Red could leave it and make all the right decisions tomorrow because he thinks that way. He's not ruled by emotion, where Tom is ruled by emotion. And it seems like he ends up making snap judgments, rash judgments, bad judgments. If anything, I want him to stay as far away from Liz as humanly possible. And at this point, I'm okay with Red putting a bullet in him as a character. And it's not just because I've always had a problem with their relationship. I don't think they belong together. But when you have a character that is this toxic, even though Red has some toxicity, he also does everything he can to protect Liz. And he's shown that time and time again, where Tom keeps putting her life in jeopardy or risking her having a very, very bad future, in my opinion.
Well, I love that you mentioned the toxic thing, because in the same case, though, Red, even though he's trying to do the good thing and trying to protect, it's as toxic as if you were doing toxic things, because you have the clearly where she's trying to make whatever it was, pizza or toast or whatever it was, and she gets the fire, and then Boz runs in with a gun, and you got this kid who's autistic sitting there in the same room. She's completely right. How can she have a kid when you got Boz coming in every 10 seconds checking on her? I mean, that just adds to the toxicity.
Yeah, I don't see it the same. Here's what I think. I think Tom wants to be Red. He wants to take care of her via the way that Red does. So I'm going to go out and get this big score, and then I'm going to have the money, and we can get away from... He's telling Liz so we can get away from Red. But it's really so I can do all the things that Red's doing now. I can hire someone to keep an eye on you. I can do all these things. We can move away. We can be on our own. You know, he's going for the quick score. He's not thinking it through. I think Red mostly thinks things through. Obviously, he's got a huge master plan. He always knows where everybody is every five you know, every 5 minutes, so he knows where everybody is. Tom doesn't even know where he's at. He's in some random kid's bathtub bleeding out. God.
I just want to put it out there. It's like, I appreciate the fact that we get to see bullets taken out of legs and stuff. I don't need to see it. I get what you're doing, okay?
Does it bother you or something?
It doesn't bother me, but it's like
feels like it bothers you.
I need the one shot to establish, okay, there's a bullet in his leg and he's taking it out, but I don't need it to stay there for a long time. It gets a little bit, and then you start to pass out with him at the same time.
Blood doesn't bother me. I thought it was a really cool scene and really great effects. And I liked how the kid came home and there's a random guy bleeding in his bathtub. And he's just like, huh, that's odd. Like, if I was him, I would probably, if at his age, crying, screaming, yelling, something. He's just like, huh, there's a guy bleeding out of my bathtub. By the way, Ryan Eggle does a great job fainting. That was a really good faint.
It was.
I know that sounds weird, but you watch so much TV and movies, you know, when people faint, and it's kind of like always they just drop. And his was a whole woozy, I don't know. It's a stupid thing to mention, but I liked it.
It's good acting.
Yeah, it was. It was very good. So we'll see what happens. I got a feeling next episode we're going to get a whole lot more of Tom. We'll see what happens. Liz. Oh, we got two left. The two big ones. Red wants to drop a trust account on Liz. I'm kind of curious, why can't she take it exactly? Because she had no problem taking his money while he was saving her ass on the run the last season.
Very right.
So I don't quite understand that. Now suddenly it's dirty money. Dirty money got you all over the country, lady, and cleared your name. So take it.
Well,
take it.
She's trying to distance herself from Red, and obviously she takes the money, and then Red's always going to be in her life, right? So this is her way of saying, I can do this on my own. I don't need you, even though she clearly does.
True. And we're going to talk about the explanation he gives to Liz about her parents like here shortly. We're actually going to play the audio for you, but we're going to finish talking about the characters before we do that. He's talking to her, or she's talking to a couple looking to adopt her child that live in Annapolis. But she mentions some things, and it doesn't seem like they know it. Or now this could be overthinking again, right?
Right.
But, you know, especially Maria's by the Water, I think was the name of the restaurant. Do you think they're legit? Because she seems taken with them, but, you know, I don't know. Just something about them seemed off, like I don't trust them.
That's exactly what I was thinking, because literally it was like last week the open adoption thing is not going to work. And then here they're like, oh, yeah, open adoption. We're fine with open adoption. And you're like, hey, there's even tall ships going by. It's like because you have a ship fetish apparently with Tom and the Harbor Master and everything else. So it just ties right into your life. We're the perfect couple.
That's a good point. I didn't even think of that. She does have a ship fetish. It's a weird fetish to have. Wow. Now, do you think, I'm going on the record, I think they are shady. They are not good people. These are people that want to steal her baby. That's what I think.
I think they're perfectly fine people.
Man, don't be that guy. Pick a side. Like, what do you legitimately
think? I thought they were shady from the get-go.
Okay.
100%. Right. I agree with you.
There you go. Does that hurt? It doesn't hurt, right?
A little bit. Feels like taking a bullet out of my leg.
You going to piss out? Because I'm going to scream and cry, and then I'm calling 911, and you're getting arrested. Because you shouldn't be in my bathtub bleeding. So that's really the big crux. And she's also, they're showing her connection. She obviously has a great maternal instinct. She's trying to come to grips with, what was the kid's name? I forgot his name.
Ethan.
Ethan, thank you. She's really breaking through with Ethan, even though, you know, people were trying to kill Ethan. But, you know, it really, I like the maternal instinct in Liz. It really seems like it's clicking. Obviously, being pregnant probably helps. So, it was cool. It wasn't as aggravating as I thought it was going to be. I do think we're having way too many baby storylines the last few weeks, which is what I was worried about. But I'm still enjoying the show. It hasn't, like, damaged it.
But the baby storylines are still working from a Blacklist perspective.
They are, but it is going exactly what I said I was going to do.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't be remiss if I didn't see some people talking about it. I do not think this way, do not feel this way, but there were some people when Noah came in bursting in with the gun and they were wrestling with each other, there were some people that were like, Noah's going to shoot the baby.
Oh my God, that's horrible.
I know.
It would be cool, not cool, and that came out wrong.
Not cool in a real life perspective, but
don't
cool
write a letter.
Cool for the show.
Cool because television doesn't do stuff like that. So that would be cool in a wow, they went there. I mean, that's one of those that would be a horribly shocking moment.
It would
to have something like that happen on television. I don't know if Actually, I don't know if that would be good or bad for the show.
I don't know.
To be honest with you.
Because, I mean, it was like, you know, accidental gunfire goes off during the struggle, and it just happens to, you know, take the baby out at the same time.
And I'm telling you, when you bring kids into it, people feel very strongly one way or the other.
So
very, very strong.
I'm going to go on the record here and say thank you, Blacklist writers, John Bokenkamp, John Eisendrath, and everybody. You have now just made the entire world more sadistic because of the show.
You suck up. All right, so Red. Red loves fairy tales. Well, duh. I mean, he tells you one every week. I mean,
pretty much.
If not several. Several. So I think that was painfully obvious. And usually when he starts, characters have to check to make sure they're standing on plastic. Because, you know, he kills them.
Yep.
Really quickly after the story. Why doesn't anyone ever stop him? Like, you think, because a lot of people know who Red is, right? It's just a weird question I have. If he showed up, he's in my house, right? I come home one night, I see a fedora. I'm like, why is there a fedora with a guy underneath it in my house? Okay. I learn it's Red Reddington. I know this guy. I know how he's killed pretty much all my friends. I sit down, he starts telling me a story. I run the hell and jump out a window. I never sit there and let him finish it out because I got a feeling when the story is done, so am I. You know what I mean?
Right.
Run. Don't listen to story time. That's your advice. You ever run into Jane Spader on the street and he starts telling you a story? Run. Just get out. Oh, that's funny. Okay, well, Leslie Jones cameo, we talked about that. It's exactly what the Blacklist needed. We just need to lighten things up. And we got this speech. We've talked about just about everything else that Red's done, except for the file, which we're going to do in a second. But let's talk about the speech he gives to Liz. Everybody's talking about it. Let's hear it, and then we'll discuss it. Go ahead, Troy.
I found a couple to take the baby. Thinking about it is one thing, but actually doing it. How did she do it? My mother.
Your parents loved each other very much. The Cold War was hard. Too hard for your father. When the Soviet Union was collapsing, he took you from her. She gave up everything to follow him. To follow you.
The night of the fire, that's what they were arguing about.
Your mother, despite what he'd done, she wanted him back. She wanted them to be a family. As much as it pains me to say it, he was probably the only man she ever really loved.
And I shot him.
It was an accident.
Tell me. I need to know.
Your mother was never the same after that. The man she loved killed by the child she adored. It was just too much. 2 months later, she went to Cape May, left her clothes on the beach, walked into the ocean, and was never seen again.
So that night, I killed both my parents.
You were a child. There should never have been a gun for you to grab. Looking back, I'm not sure I shouldn't have raised you myself. I don't want you looking back with that kind of regret.
All right. Oof. That was moving. Well, it feels like everybody affiliated with the show has actually already stated that Red is not her father, but people have still been debating it. We've even kind of made joking alludes to it several times. I don't know if that really is a correct way to say that statement, but I said it anyway. Can we finally agree, Troy, you and I, that this cements it show-wise, that Red is not her birth father?
If you have to believe that Red doesn't lie to Liz, which I still say he hasn't, then, yeah, I think we can cement that Red is not the father.
Okay. Now, do you think that is going to cause a disturbance in the force because many people just do not want to believe that?
No, they're going to continue not believing it, just like I'm going to continue believing my theories right. And there's even parts of this conversation where you're like, he's tearing up a little bit there. I wonder, you know.
Oh, everything is still on the table until it's over. But I think as far as I'm concerned, it cements it. I mean, I haven't really thought that for a long time, honestly. That he was her father. I guess initial reaction. What do you take away? What's the first thing you took away from that conversation?
The first thing I took away is that Liz twists Red's words because he said she took off her clothes, went into the ocean, and was never seen again. She immediately says, "I killed both my parents." Didn't say that she drowned. didn't say she just didn't go for a swim and come up later on down the beach somewhere else and had plastic surgery and turned into a guy. But at,
well done working that in.
You know, it's just the fact that she literally assumes that she was dead, that she's dead, and she's not. Because
I did not see that coming. Shame on me. Shame on me. You're right. He didn't say that she was dead. He didn't. And I don't think anybody watching really thinks that she's dead. I think maybe he thought that at one time, but he doesn't think that anymore. My initial reaction that I got was, he's an uncle or something. He's got to be an uncle. He's a family. He's a relative of some sort, because he alludes to, I should have raised you myself. Or looking back, I'm not so sure I shouldn't have raised you myself.
So the question then becomes, is Red's country of origin at question? Because if he's so connected to the father and the mother as some person on Liz, because he's American in this naval growing up, being an admiral and all this other stuff, but these two are clearly Russian. Like, you're saying that these guys were friends during the Cold War and...
No. I'm saying he is either her real dad, the one who died's brother or something, or he is responsible for them all dying. So he wears a heavy heart on that because he orphaned this child and ruined her life. And that's why he has such affection for her, but still needs her. You know, he needs her for whatever his plan is because of whatever the incident was. So it's, to me, it's one of those two. I mean, it's still open. Could go many different directions, but I see it as he's either the real dad's uncle or the real dad's brother, some affiliation there, or he's responsible for everything that happened that night.
Right. And that's
where I'm at.
And if he's responsible for it, then it clearly ties into, if you assume the Christmas story is true from Madeline Pratt, then clearly he's saying, oh, look, my family's dead and I caused this family to fall apart, so I'm going to pseudo-adopt this family. This child, because it's the only thing I can do, because one, I lost my family and I miss my family. So here I'll try to be a family for this person.
Yeah. I mean, it could be plausible that, you know, maybe her dad was an awful person. Her real dad that she shot and killed was an awful person. And Red, maybe he killed Red's family and Red was after him for revenge. And therefore this happened, like he stormed in to confront him, and then daughter got a hold of the gun, shot, killed dad. Red lived. Mom died, but he always loved mom, that kind of thing. So he felt obligated to take care of her. I mean, there's a lot of different variations this could go.
Yeah.
I definitely say he's not her dad, though.
And I like what you're going there, because maybe this was a thing of maybe Liz's dad killed Red's family. So Red was doing this for revenge. And so the best revenge was the fact that at the end of the day, I now have your daughter.
Mm-hmm. Could be. Could be. And I've taken her under my wing. She now has faith in me, confides in me. You know, there's a lot of different ways this could go.
Right.
So I'm just glad that, at least from my perspective, and I think it should cement to the audience that he's not her dad. I know it won't. I know some people are just, they want to believe, hey, and you believe what you want, because we could be wrong too. You know, we don't know. I mean, there's nothing 100% until the show's over. So, or until they reveal it, which I kind of wish they would. But so we're still talking about that, but that's where I'm at. Now, the one thing that I got from this that I think is important is the man she loved was killed by the child she adored. Do you think he should, like, I guess at some point, do you think he should paint a better picture of that? I mean, he tried to make her feel better about it, but you know, I don't know. Well, I guess if he doesn't lie to her, that's why he would tell her, right? Keeps reminding her that, hey, you killed your daddy.
Yep.
That's that. Is there anything else you got from this conversation that you is worth noting other than the dad thing?
Nope, I'm good.
Okay. Well, there was a sweet moment between Anya and Red, and I really thought that was very sweet how she, you know, signs to him after he returns her to Vasilia Patinka. And then eventually, she gives Red what he wanted all along, this folder, the Glasnost files, whatever that is. And it's in the file head, it says, Paktoba Rostova. What the heck is this? And he does say the statement, it just keeps getting worse. So what do you think, Trey? What is Paktoba Rostova? And it is hyphenated. So, you know, we heard the story. We just heard the story Red told about her parents. Could this be mom and dad? Could this be somebody else? Who is this? What do you think?
Well, hyphenated, first thing I always think about is like married names, like my wife. She hyphenated her name for a long time. She didn't actually change her name at all. She wanted to keep her maiden name because that's how she was known at her job. And then she hyphenated for a while. So it could be hyphenated. Maybe this is giving us a little bit more origin story about who Katerina is.
Oh. Or it's two names. That's the other option, right? It's two different names. It's either a hyphenated name, meaning like what you just said, or it's two completely different last names, like a husband and a wife, or maybe she was remarried. Maybe she remarried here when she came, when she fled the Soviet Union, or when he fled and came here, because he took her, right? That's what the story said.
Right, right.
So, and then she came, so he came here, married someone else. Maybe that was a fight. Maybe,
Different possibilities. Or if we're going with the whole adoption angle of this episode, maybe it's like an adoption file and it's Pakhtoba and Rostova. Or it was the Pakhtoba family giving up Masha Rostova for adoption.
I saw several people alluded to that Pakhtoba is like acrylic spelling of Rostova. I don't know if that's true or not. You know, I don't speak Russian. I do not speak Russian. You know what I mean?
Yes, clearly.
So, obviously. painfully obviously. But what I do think is that there's definitely some connection, and I don't know if we're going to find out anytime soon, but it feels to me like it would be maybe Patinka helped hide the Rostovas to some degree.
Possibly. You
know, they helped hide dad and the daughter, and then maybe Katerina, who is, you know, known, came and confronted them. Maybe that were the case. And, you know, then she accidentally shot dad. And so Katerina blamed herself. So she left. I don't know where Red falls into all this, other than maybe I still think Red is an uncle or a relative of some sort. So maybe that's where he comes in. Or maybe Katerina killed his family. Killed his family. And he came to get vengeance on them that night. That's where things went south. And she accidentally killed her dad. And then her mom went into the ocean, didn't die, obviously. And then Red feels horribly guilty about that.
Possible. I was thinking more if we take the memory sequence from Luther Braxton to heart, what we heard there, you know, it sounded like the woman was coming to the house yelling at the man. And the man was like, you can't have her. You know, what are you doing here? And then she's like, you know, where's Masha? Masha, Masha. And then when that whole sequence goes down. So maybe what happened was maybe they did flee to the U.S., and maybe Pakhtoba was the Russian name. Rostova is still a Russian name too. Maybe it's like a change name situation is what I'm saying. Maybe the Masha and the dad were put into like witness protection hiding, and Red was the person that was responsible for their protection. Mm-hmm. And then when Katerina shows up on the soil to then confront the husband, then maybe this is where Red felt bad because it was Red's job to protect him and he didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And then ended up, you know, Liz ended up killing the dad, and then Masha or Katerina fled, and then that's when Red said, okay, I got to take care of this kid because no one's going to take care of the kid.
And set it up. He didn't necessarily take care of her. He just set it up.
Right, right, right.
Set it up. And that's why he regrets. He thinks he
should have raised him himself.
Yeah, should have raised him himself. Yeah, 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 yeah. Or there's a possibility that there were two. Now, if this theory is right, it's acrylic spelling of Rostova, maybe there is another sibling out there. And that's why it keeps getting worse, because now he knows who the sibling is somehow. Maybe that file tells him who the relative is. Maybe that's something. There's just an idea. Maybe it's Wrestler. I'm just saying. Maybe it's Wrestler.
No.
Maybe he's brother. And Red's like, oh crap, that's her brother. There's so many different ways that could go, and it's really confusing. I really don't know where it's going to go. And if anybody thinks they know, man, you've got a file with two names. You don't know. Come on now.
It just keeps getting worse.
It does just keep getting worse. Well, we've got, I think we covered everything, man. Is there anything left in this episode? I think we got it.
I think it was good. You know, this was Taylor's first writing attempt from what I understand. So I think she did pretty well for her first time out.
Good job, Taylor. Nice job. Nice job. And please don't take it to heart that I predicted the well thing. I am that messed up in the head. I automatically think creepy. That's just what I do.
Yep.
Yep. It was well done. I really like seeing somebody die in a well. I think that was pretty cool. And then the butterflies shoot. Now, that was a cool visual effect, too, by the way. Okay, well, the show's not over. There's more. So don't go anywhere. But please remember to download the Blacklist Exposed app for iOS and Android. And be sure to go even deeper into the mystery of Red Reddington by visiting our partner Blacklist site, theblacklistnbc.com. Now fully redesigned and mobile friendly. We'll be back with this week's Red's Rhetoric right after this. Are you sick of the endless, poorly realized remakes as we are? Then take a listen to Remake This Movie Right, where we take a classic movie, figure out what works and what doesn't, throw a dash of humor at it, and then we craft our own remake. So by the end of every episode, we will remake this movie right. Recently featured as a podcast to listen to by the AV Club, you can find us at RemakeThisMovieRight.com or your podcast app of choice. Every movie you love will get a remake someday, and only you can make it better.
...56% of you think that having a citywide network of undercover spies is pretty cool. Just remember, the next time you stay at a hotel then, that someone is always watching. This week our first scene comes when Red is discussing his time in captivity.
One of the bravest men I ever knew was deaf. Zeb Pasha, a communist I shared a cell with in a military prison outside Ankara. Zeb and I were interrogated by the K section. Foot whipping, hung by a wrist, electric shock. I was nothing more than a groaning heap in the corner. Every time our guard passed the cell, Zeb would start signing. His fingers were a blur, pointing and tapping, twisting and swirling. The same thing over and over again and again. And lo and behold, one night our cell was left unlocked. Turns out the guard's daughter was deaf. And old Zeb been signing, "My wife, my daughter, my life." 6 words unspoken convinced that guard to let us go. Such a beautiful language. Like that girl just then. What did she say to you on her way out?
"I'm grateful for you."
The second is when Red gives us a tale of two brothers.
"It's been some time since freshman English, but I seem to recall that fairy tales about abandonment, death, and witches are supposed to allow children to deal with their fears in symbolic terms. But there's nothing symbolic about this place. You're a real witch."
"I don't know who you are, but if you don't get off my property right now, I'll call the police."
"I believe they're already on their way. While we're waiting, how about I tell you a story? It's about a mother, her 2 sons, and a canoeing accident."
"You talked to Noah?"
"The family lived by a river. The boys often took a canoe out to fish. One day, the canoe tipped. Inexplicably, the elder son, the golden child, the champion swimmer, drowned, while the younger, the lesser child, survived. The way Noah tells it, you allowed Theo to believe it was his fault, that he was the reason his brother died, that he would have been better off dead."
"They could have died together. It's beautiful and innocent. Theo would have been spared all this."
"By this, you mean the horror of being different. Is that why you killed them?"
"I saved them."
"From what?"
"I make sure the damaged ones don't grow up to be outcasts like Theo. Hated, pitied. No one loves an outcast."
"Not even his mother."
"I couldn't send my son away. But when I look at him, I see what these children shouldn't be. And what they won't be. Because I see the life I saved them from."
"I'm ugly."
"From where I sit, there's only one ugly person in the room, and it's certainly not you, Theo."
Which was your favorite this week? Vote in the Facebook group or in the Twitter poll. If you believe that sign language is a beautiful language, then vote Red Sign. Or if you think Theo is beautiful, vote Red Ugly.
We are here now with Special Agent Intel. Dondi is up first. Overall, a good episode. There was a different writer this last week, but the B story from last week continued to this week and next. I can't remember that happening before. Is this really new, or is my memory wacky? In any case, it made the Tom story from last week a lot more interesting.
I think this is a new concept for them, because it never really had like Tom being a separate thing, unless you count it when they were doing the German situation.
Right. Well, that would count.
That would count.
So I would say it has been done before. It's just been a while.
I don't know if it was a separate story, though. This truly feels like it's a separate, like we were saying, like a separate arc.
Well, we thought the German thing was separate for a while, too, didn't we?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, we did.
You did.
Yeah, we did. I did. All right, two, Glenn, you got to love him. Notice that they refrained from the I'm just yanking your chain line and modified it into appearing not to like the dogs. Speaking of which, the doggies! Very nice touch bringing them back, and funny as hell. Red finally got to yank Glenn's chain a little. The number of the week was a bit muted. The surrounding stories were more emphasized, in my opinion, had a telegraphed ending from the moment the ex-KGB lady brought up her missing daughter. But because there was no buildup, it engendered no letdown for me. Four, the baby from H.E. Double Toothpicks. You mean hell? We could say hell.
Say
it's
hell.
Okay.
It's okay.
Less of an irritant this week, but as I said last week, we have miles of this before we can put the issue to sleep. I was sort of surprised that Red seems seriously pro-keeping it. He must be cognizant that the safety issues would be daunting. Five, Red must think Katerina Rostova is still alive since he went after her file. Question is, why pursue her now? Perhaps to have her take the baby? It was nice that they fleshed out Liz's parents some more without overdoing it. All right, well, it was nice that they fleshed out Liz's parents some more without overdoing it. I agree with that. Leslie Jones of the DMV, who drove Red crazy, is an actress who is a fan of the show. I may have heard this story on your last podcast. If so, it bears repeating. Yeah, it was great that she was on there.
I didn't realize she was just wanted to be on the show because she was such a rabid fan. I thought when the press release came through that she was going to be on, I thought she was going to be a blacklister.
Mm-hmm.
But nope, just a cameo, apparently.
Hey, it was great. It was a great cameo.
It was funny. Mm-hmm. And we needed it. It was much, much needed.
Yes.
Andrew, this episode was above average, but it felt more like a horror movie mixed in with The Blacklist. It had me going through every emotion, laughing out loud, crying, scared, disgusted, creeped out, confused, and intrigued. I was happy to see one of Red's irregulars come back, Glenn. I'm intrigued how he and Red met and why he gets away with antagonizing Red. I would like to know more info on the teacher and Red. Was she a spy or did she work for the government? Why did she think her daughter was dead and why did she have this file? Why would you buy frozen waffles if you don't have a toaster? Why would you leave paper towels next to the stove? When Gina opened the van doors, I thought the major would be there. Wonder if he comes for Tom in the hospital. I laughed out loud during the scene where Red got ambushed in the waiting room.
Good points. Good points. Except, you know what? I was a single guy once, and I had waffles without a toaster. I remember doing that, so it happens.
And let's be clear. He said in here, you know, he loves that Red's irregulars come back, and he talks about Glenn. Brimley is cool, too, okay?
Yeah, he never gets credit, does he?
Yeah, he's a torture,
he's a torture guy.
You don't even get to see his methods. He's that good.
Yeah, and he just seems like the nicest guy ever. Like, I would just tell him stuff just because he seemed like a nice guy. He seems like my grandpa. Hey, Grandpa, what do you want to know? I'll tell you.
Oh, great. Now I got a picture of a llama licking someone to death in my head again.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome. And Doc H said, this episode seemed off to me.
Meh.
Just kidding. We had some red insight about kids, and the Tom, Jacob, Ryan, Eggold segments seemed to carry the most juice. I don't agree with you on that. Nobody on the task force had any weight behind their contributions. The whole episode seemed more like a fringe season. Everybody, my God, did you pay them to say it?
I did not pay them to say it.
The whole episode seemed more like a fringe season one reunion a la Maria DeZia from The Cure, Neil Huff, Clark Middleton, The Killer Butterflies, and even Amir Arison all caught my eye more than the core plotline. All this stuff is from Fringe, is what you're telling me?
Yeah, it's a very good point, Doc, because I thought when I saw Maria, I was like, yep, I got that one. But yeah, totally. I forgot about the butterflies on the Dreamscape episode. And of course, Amir was in there. So yeah, it was a Fringe reunion.
Yeah, all I'm doing is getting sleepy from all that Fringe talk. All right, the whole affair seemed below.
Remember, though, Nicole said she's the script coordinator and she was on Fringe. So it would make sense that you would see actors that Nicole had worked with in the past.
All I'm saying is I've never seen Fringe. So every time you guys reference it, I feel bad. A, I feel dumb because I haven't seen it yet.
You should.
I mean to. My mother has told me, I don't know how many times, I would love this show. I just, I started watching one episode. It seemed cool. And then I forgot to go back to it. And then I just keep forgetting because other cool, there's so many cool things on TV now.
Your mom, who you cherish so much, talk about the whole medical stuff with her and then taking you to movies and stuff. And then she tells you to watch Fringe and you don't listen to your mom. I hope you turn into a butterfly.
Trust me, she'd be the first one to stick my ass in a well. She had the opportunity. The whole affair seemed well below the February sweeps month excitement I was expecting this week. There's a sad emoji somewhere in here.
Yep.
Wah, wah, wah. Less than normal generous cheers this week. Less than the normally generous cheers this week, Doc H. I don't know, man. I mean,
this is exactly how you felt when you talked to me after the show was over. And then you're like,
and then I rewatched it. I felt a little bit better about it. I didn't like, here's the thing. Even a lesser episode of Blacklist, I think, is better than most everything else on TV. So
truth,
I have yet to see one that I would really call bad. But you know, every episode plays different for different people. So if you didn't like it, you didn't like it.
And the February sweeps month, it's a comment that you have to do. You do have to call out. But remember, again, 22 episode seasons. We've talked about this. It just happens that the lull period of the Blacklist falls in February. It can't be awesome 8 episodes out of the gate and then awesome 8 episodes to end, and then you got the 6 in the middle that are just kind of like, we got to get there some way.
Yeah, and real quick, can we mention it? Sweep should go away. There shouldn't be a sweep season.
Yeah.
You know why? Because TV isn't watched like it was in 1965. So how about we move forward with how we judge ratings now? Yeah. I mean, I just think it's a stupid, stupid concept that is archaic.
I mean, we're at the point now with smartphones and stuff. Let's just have people that watch the episode just have a thumbs up or thumbs down, like a hot or not kind of thing. And if people like the show, then you know exactly who people want, and then you can pay advertisers to get that data.
I can't tell you how many times like you'll get a show that's canceled because it wasn't, you know, it didn't do well in the ratings. Everybody I know was talking about that show. Maybe, I don't know, maybe you're talking to the wrong people. I don't think the Nielsens have it figured out right.
I tell you, for as much TV as I watch, there isn't a Nielsen box in my house, but my mom's got one, and she doesn't even watch like the network TV. She watches the Home and Garden channel.
Yeah, so that's doing well for fringy shows, right?
Yep.
Right?
It's all conspiracy. Someone's paying them to put boxes in certain places that they
shouldn't
be.
It's always a conspiracy. All right, next up.
Next up, Crystal said, love the episode. Lots of juicy tidbits of info in there. Loved Glenn and the alpaca smile emoticon. I love it. You copy this stuff in, and then you don't get to see what the emoticons actually look like. So apparently there's an alpaca emoticon. I have to look for that later.
That's funny.
I thought the Blacklister was great. Liz was great in the episode and loved she had more to do.
So we just went from like 0 to 60 in that one.
Yep.
Like Doc's like, and then Crystal's like, I was all over it.
And we're going to go back to 0 now, apparently.
Crystal's like, kill more kids. Sorry, you didn't say that, Crystal. Aaron did. Carol said, I'm not a fan of the special needs part of this episode. Very disturbing. Not sending a great message that the moms are nuts. The other parts of the episode were good, especially the DMV. Did Red refer to her mom's husband as Liz's dad or just her husband?
I guess we have to go back and play it again.
Yeah, go back and play the audio because it's right here in this episode, so that'll be easy for you. I'm with you on the special needs part was disturbing. My uncle Gene was developmentally delayed, and it's really tragic. It's really hard, and there are a lot of people that really, like my grandmother, and not to go too long, but my grandmother raised my uncle Gene because, you know, nobody else would take him. Holmes wouldn't take him. I mean, he's mentally retarded, and he couldn't. And I know it's called developmentally delayed. My grandma called it mentally retarded. That's what I'm calling it. And she took care of him his whole life. One of the most wonderful people in the whole wide world. Those people, I think, should get more attention, but that really wasn't the focus of the show. So I get it feels like you're going for low-hanging fruit to a degree, but I also think, you know, this kind of thing does happen. I've seen it happen through my family. I've seen people that he knew that were developmentally delayed. Same thing. Parents didn't want to deal with those kids. So I actually liked that they brought it in. It kind of hit home for me to a degree.
Yeah. And mom being nuts a little bit, I agree with you there. But the dad was just as, you know, complicit in this as well. I mean, he's taking the money and setting this whole thing up. So he's not exactly
he wasn't.
A peach either.
No. Oh, the husband.
The husband, yeah.
Okay. I thought you meant like.
Not Ethan's dad.
Yeah,
Theo,
not Ethan's
dad.
Yeah. Because he wanted to take care of his son.
Right. No, yeah. Theo's dad, Noah.
And I'm going to tell you, I'm glad it was the mom this time. It's always the dad.
That's right.
I want it to be the mom. I'm sick of it being the dad. We do good stuff, too, all the time. Nobody gives us credit. Go ahead.
All right. Paula said, Red giving the two blondes to Glenn. Genius. Still chuckling. Great episode. This one hits home. Both mothers got what they deserved. Red is great. He really knows how to make an entrance. Dembe's arm must be a little bit better.
Yeah, TV time, man. You know, a couple weeks, a lot of healing can happen in that time.
That's right.
Second to last. David said, really enjoyed this episode. Lots of great moments from Glenn to Mr. Brimley's llama. Such a surreal moment. Red telling Liz more of her background and his emotion at her rejections and seeing the mother and daughter reunited. Mr. Spader is a damn fine actor. You're damn right. I get the frustration with Liz's character. Sometimes she's just like a petulant child. Not Megan bashing. I love her, but I have faith the writers are well aware of how she's being or been perceived. And sorry to say, Troy Heinrichs, we're back to your mom theory looking unlikely crazy again because of the way Red speaks about the subject.
And I just made it work on this episode, so you can go back and listen to that.
I don't know if you made it work, but you made a funny. Does that count? You made a funny.
Hey, whatever.
Don't go crazy.
Whatever entertains. Nate said the episode had an interesting and different tone from the usual fare we get from the show. That's because usually it's not season one. That's why.
I see what you did there.
Yeah, not subtle at all. Cooper gave us the question of the hour, and I was asking myself, what does Red get out of this? The answer is Red gets closer to Liz's mom, and he lets Liz's imagination run wild on what happened to her parents, and who knew that Tom had 9 lives?
I'm a cat. Now check me out. I'm a cat.
That just went so weird, Troy. God.
Meow.
All right, guys, I think it's going to do it for this episode of The Blacklist Exposed. We have tortured you long enough with our ramblings. Big thanks for listening, and don't forget to answer our profiling question of the week. What is in the file?
Yes, we'll see you next week.
Take care, guys.
Until next time, I'm Agent Troy Heinrichs. That's at Troy Heinrichs on Twitter. And if you want to learn more about me, just visit, well, about.me/Troy Heinrichs.
And I'm Agent Aaron Peterson. You can hear me talking about movies and TV on the Hollywood Outsider podcast, as well as Remake This Movie Right. We are available at thehollywoodoutsider.com or on Twitter at @H_Outsider. Be sure to subscribe, download the app, submit your feedback, but most importantly, keep yourself off of
the blacklist.
The Blacklist Exposed is a Golden Spiral Media production. Find more of our great podcasts at goldenspiralmedia.com/podcasts.